Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues with you today, including concussions and sports-related concussions. Did you know that concern about concussions in football goes back 100 years? I think about 100 years ago when 18 college football players died while playing that game. So we're going to be taking a look at concussions and how they affect players now with our two guests, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum and Laurie Tyne Brody. Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. Jill, good to see you again.
It's great to be here.
And Laurie Tyne Brody, Laurie, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health's Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Laurie, good to see you too.
Awesome to be here.
Have you experienced a concussion? What was it like? What physical therapy questions do you have? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post perhaps on our Ideas Network Facebook page. You know, Claire called in to say she had a concussion last year from a soccer ball. She's 59 years old, told that concussions are worse when you're older, still recovering. Also said that physical therapy and occupational therapy were very helpful. So if somebody's wondering why we're talking about concussions when it involves physical, why would it involve physical therapy?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I'm seeing somebody currently in the clinic who came in for a musculoskeletal injury, but some of it was the sequelae of a concussion. So the concussion came first, followed by the other injury, and it takes a tremendously long time to recover from that. And it's not just sports. I mean, certainly she was playing soccer, but, you know, as a kid, I ran into a tree.
Yeah.
Sustained a concussion.
Fall off a bike.
Exactly. Car accidents.
Car accidents. Yeah, people fall. They have work-related injuries. I mean, any of a number of...
What actually happens to the brain during a concussion?
If we could answer that, we could all retire. But what we do know is that the brain sustains some sort of trauma. You know, your brain is in an amount of fluid, and so it can move back and forth and has a little bit of flexibility. But what happens is, from the acceleration or deceleration of your head, the brain gets sloshed around a little bit. And in essence, for lack of better terms, you bruise it and create swelling in the area, and it has to re-heal just like any other injury.
So heretofore, we've been really focused on the brain, obviously, as we should. But one of the things we've come to discover, and the research is still relatively in its infancy, and that is people who have had a concussion are at a higher risk of sustaining a subsequent musculoskeletal injury. And the study we were talking about earlier focused specifically on lower extremity injuries, and there was some research done on a huge cohort of people in the military. And one of the nice things about this is they had a very large cohort. This wasn't just a small group of 20 or 30 athletes, but several thousand Army soldiers. And they also excluded people who had a prior lower extremity injury or a prior concussion, because sometimes you've had an ankle injury and then, you know, you may re-injure your ankle after your concussion and you don't really know if that original ankle injury confounded it. So they found in this group of people in the military that at 15 months, they had a 45% increased risk of a lower extremity injury, and at 2 years, a 38% increased risk of a lower extremity injury. So we're still trying to sort out what the mechanism is. You know, we know people recover cognitively from this, you know, in ways that we can measure with impact testing and things like that. And we do some agility testing, and many times these athletes can pass these tests. But when you combine the mental component with the physical component, then the wheels start to come off.
And that's something called dual tasking. And it, in my mind, it parallels texting while driving. We know that you're at increased risk of an automobile accident, eight times if you text while you drive, because your brain has to do too many things. So what we're looking at now with people who are returning to physical activity where their heart rate has to get up is we know that once your heart rate accelerates when you're biking, whatever, if you have had sustained a concussion, that can bring your symptoms back on. So we do a lot of cardiovascular retraining with individuals to make sure that their symptoms stay at bay while they're doing their cardiovascular activity. Then we also did all the cognitive testing. Now what we're realizing is we have to do them together. So there's many more people doing what we're calling dual tasking. So while you have an individual on an exercise bike, they have to read cognitive cards. So we have cards that are colored green, but say the word red, like flashcards.
Yeah.
And you have to quickly respond. We'll say the color, not the word. And we go back and forth and we have athletes look side to side. We have them count backwards from 100 by sevens. They do math skills. They do very different cognitive tasks while they're exercising to see if they can combine the two. And many times that's where we see that people still have difficulty.
Yeah. I was thinking back, you know, I had one bike accident where I actually cracked the helmet when I came off. Mm-hmm. And playing ball and so forth, there are times I remember seeing stars, but I have no idea I assume there were some concussions.
Absolutely.
Involved in those. So you can have a concussion probably and not even know you had it.
You can. Most people will recover from a mild concussion within 7 to 10 days. So the average concussion doesn't impair people for long term. The person that we talked about earlier, the 59-year-old woman who's still having symptoms. So she's kind of an outlier where she's having prolonged symptoms. And those are the people that are actually very, very difficult to treat because Claire probably works. She reads the paper. She drives. She does all these activities that require significant cognitive function. And what we know is that can be very fatiguing, very taxing on an individual. Somebody who sustains a concussion and they have difficulty driving and they're married and have kids, now that changes the entire dynamics of the family because now all of that falls on the spouse or the partner. Mm-hmm. It can have a significant impact on an individual's lifestyle.
Right. And we don't know what happens to those people who hit their head and never present for medical care. We only see the people and we only have data on the people who show up in the medical system. So there's still a large cohort of people out there that we don't really know what happens when you have that mild ding, you know, where you just kind of go, wow, I got my bell rung, and you get up and move on and have a headache for a day and then go back about your business.
Right.
Yeah. I was thinking about that, the bike accident, because I'd injured my elbow pretty bad too. And so when I went to the emergency room, I mentioned that I'd cracked my helmet, but I didn't go through any testing for that. It was all about the elbow.
Exactly. And I think if you would have that same accident, we don't want you to.
That was 15 years ago.
But if you had that same accident now, I think the approach would be very, very different. The other population where we're really assessing for concussions is the population who sustains a car accident and has whiplash. So if you're hit at such a velocity that you can have a neck injury and you have whiplash, chances are you have concussion type symptoms. So there's a lot of patients that will report, you know, dizziness after a car accident and things like that. And in essence, we have to decide whether those issues are coming from their neck, from their inner ear, or if they're concussion related, they're cognitively related. So physical therapists are trained to kind of sort through three different domains that can have an impact on concussion, whether it's coming from the cervical spine or the neck, whether it's coming from the inner ear, that's vestibular, or whether it's coming from visual fields, and that's called ocular motor. So all of those can have an impact on concussion type symptoms.
Back to the kids for a bit, because I have a soon-to-be 15-year-old who will be, you know, she'll be cross-country and she'll be playing basketball and soccer this coming year, probably. She hasn't had, to my knowledge, hasn't had a concussion, but how long should a player sit out if they have a concussion? Is there any rhyme or reason to...
It's all based upon their symptoms. It's until they're asymptomatic. And so there's algorithms we have that look at the cognitive skills like Lori talked about, and then there's other testing we put them through to increase their heart rate and monitor their symptoms, their blood pressure, their heart rate, and they have to pass those tests prior to being cleared for activity. And we may clear them for non-contact first and make sure that they can do the activities without any collision or any contact with an individual prior to clearing them for full contact.
And that assumes that that person has been seen in the medical system.
Correct.
Yeah.
So one of the important take-home messages is if you or your child has sustained a concussion, it would be best to have them evaluated by medical personnel. If you're in high school, many times there's an athletic trainer there who should be skilled in the testing for this. And if there are any red flags, would refer the athlete back to their health care provider, their primary care provider.
And there's a lot of public awareness that it's the individual's responsibility to come forward and say that they, you know, are having these symptoms, but it's also very important that teammates check on each other. So if they notice that a peer in the huddle is acting differently, responding differently, everyone should be astute and let the medical personnel know that, you know, I'm not sure if they know it, but they're acting differently. I'm a little concerned about that. I know they got hit really hard on that last play. They didn't respond appropriately when we were in the huddle. So everybody has to take care of each other is the take-home message. Mm-hmm. It's really important.
Yeah. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne Brody, our guests today. They are physical therapists at the University of Wisconsin. Lori's with the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments. We started talking about concussions. We can continue that, and we can also take other physical therapy questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Dave in Marshfield, it's your turn. Dave, thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I just tuned in and heard the discussion about concussion, and there's a question I have about the possible concussion and what I should do at this point. I was really sick from a tick-borne disease, and I woke up in the morning thinking, wow, I must have slept goofy. And I went past the mirror in the bathroom and saw blood on my face and thought, well, that's weird. So I went in about the tick disease and said, and then there's this, you know, other thing I don't know about. The doc said, well, how about an x-ray? Well, my jaw was busted and had to be wired shut. I don't remember a fall. I found my glasses bent up laying on the floor, but I have no memory of anything and don't know if it was just from being out of it, from being sick, or if it was a concussion. And my question is, at this point, does it matter if I know it was a concussion or not? And, you know, what, if anything, to do about it?
Yeah.
So,
Lori, go ahead.
Yeah. So, Dave, what an interesting story. So, one of the things to keep in mind is that tick-borne diseases can affect your neurologic system. So I hope you're being treated for that. And I think you should see somebody who can sort out your symptoms to see if you have some underlying neurologic deficits that might be related to your tick-borne illness, or if there are deficits that are attributable to a post-concussive syndrome. So you're in the Marshfield area. There should be physical therapists. There are also many occupational therapists who specialize in this area. Find somebody who specializes in concussions and get yourself evaluated, because I think there is going to be overlap, particularly because you don't recall having a fall, that there could be some underlying neurologic involvement from your tick-borne disease.
Right, but you probably sustained some sort of fall, whether mm-hmm. obviously you don't recall it, but if it was significant enough that you sustained a fracture of your jaw, you jarred your head. There's no
doubt about
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So I would definitely just have them sort through that and see what is related to the tick-borne disease versus if there's some concussive type symptoms that you could treat.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Dave. Bob in Claybanks, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, ladies and Larry. Thanks for having the show.
Sure.
I have two questions. I did some off-road bicycling this weekend, and I've been going a couple times a week for the last month or so. And I had some weakness in my right hand afterwards. It's kind of hard to, or I noticed it more just trying to press my index finger and my thumb together.
Mm.
And it seems to be getting better, but, you know, I get the numb hands. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're off-road, you're kind of gripping the handlebars a little harder than you should.
Correct.
I was just curious if that was just some nerve damage and if it will heal on its own or what your thoughts were.
Can I ask how old you are?
65.
Okay. All right. So my first guess is it's a combination of having to grip and the position of your neck, because the index finger and thumb that you discussed is your median nerve, which is a very large nerve that exits through some of the foramen in your cervical spine. So I'm wondering if the position of your head and neck, along with all the jarring you experience with mountain biking, could be causative. So if you haven't, I don't know where Claybanks is, Larry. Where's Claybanks,
Bob?
Where's Claybanks?
Southern Door County.
Oh, yeah, great. So there's the Sheboygan area. There are people up there that could do a really good assessment to make sure that you're fitted to your mountain bike appropriately, to make sure that your head and neck are in a good position.
Yeah, there is a condition that bikers often get around their ulnar nerve, because your ulnar nerve goes around a little hook.
Tunnel of Guillain.
The hook of the hamate on your little finger side of your hand, and sometimes in that wrist extended position you can put pressure directly on that if you're weight bearing on that little bone in your wrist, and it can cause symptoms. But that tends to be more on the little finger side of your hand, not your index finger and thumb. So you should get your position on the bike assessed, and hopefully they would do some neck strengthening exercises for you as well.
And make sure you wear really well padded gloves. If you don't, I would suggest that.
And there's a good medical center in Sturgeon Bay as well.
Oh, perfect. Sturgeon Bay. That's
close.
What I was thinking. Yes.
Yeah, Sturgeon Bay would be probably the place to go.
Perfect.
So there you go, Bob. Thank you so much for calling. Excuse me. Our guests today, Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy kinds of issues today. We've been zeroing in about concussions, but can take other questions as well with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. We'll go back to the phones and go to Dennis in De Pere next. Dennis, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Just to illustrate how things have changed for the better, in 71 I was knocked unconscious while playing football. The coaches brought me around with smelling salts, asked me the typical questions, where are you, what year is it? Was back in the game, played the rest of the game, and was never diagnosed with a concussion, but had the worst headache I've ever had in my life the next day, and vomiting.
Oh.
So I just assumed it was a concussion, but they never, just said the coaches were the ones that were there assessing me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad things have changed for the better.
They absolutely have, and that's then that in the early 1970s that was really classic. Now we don't use smelling salts when someone's knocked unconscious, because they can move their head too quickly, and if they have sustained a neck fracture, they could actually end up paralyzed. So we've gone away from that. The type of tackling has changed substantially. There's no longer spearing allowed in football, which has decreased the amount of spinal cord injuries we've experienced over time as well.
Yep. And, we used to tell people, well, you need to watch your child, all night long. If they start vomiting, take them to the emergency room.
Right.
But at this point, if someone sustained as severe a concussion as Dennis suggested, he would be seen immediately.
Absolutely.
That night for evaluation.
The other thing that I think it's important that our listeners understand is we used to grade concussions, and part of the grading system was a level of unconsciousness. Now what we know is people can sustain a significant, substantial concussion without ever losing consciousness. So don't think just because somebody didn't lose consciousness, your concussion is mild or minor. That is not the case.
And there are also life-threatening aspects to certain kinds of concussions. You can have a subdural hematoma, which is a life-threatening condition. And so if you have sustained a concussion, even if you haven't lost consciousness, doesn't mean it's not an important thing to have assessed.
Right.
Thanks again for that call. Let's go to Carol in Bosco Bell next. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, a number of years back, I had a horse accident. My horse reared and we fell over sideways and I got knocked unconscious for almost 5 minutes.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I went in and had all the evals done and everything. Of course, I had a concussion. And then as 6 months, a year passed, my short-term memory was terrible. And so I went in and got further evaluated to see if I had any damage. And they said I didn't, but I used to be very sharp. Now I have to write notes to myself. My husband will say something to me, and 2 minutes later, I remember nothing of the conversation. So I'm just wondering if that is age or if it actually is from the concussion years ago.
That's a great question. There's probably components of both, and I wish I could tell you what percentage is age-related versus what percentage is related to your concussion, and unfortunately, we don't have that information.
You know, interestingly, and we don't know, we don't have evidence for this. As I said, a lot of the research is still in its infancy, but like certain knee injuries where you accelerate, for example, the arthritic process because of that injury, it's possible that the head injury sort of accelerated some of the typical age-related changes that might have normally occurred. They might have had an earlier onset and might be more significant than they would have been without the concussion.
Yeah. Thanks, Carol, for calling. Just to go along with this, Roseanne emailed to say she's 74, had a concussion 10 years ago, she was unconscious for a few seconds. She's gotten past unsteady walking and so forth, but she still has problems with, for example, she gets a little dizzy when trying to turn circles in her Zumba class. What exercises can she do to get past that?
That's a great question, and it's interesting that her symptoms are when she's turning her body or her head during Zumba. It could be an inner ear pathology that could be corrected relatively easy with physical therapy. First of all, I'm so excited to hear she's exercising. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. It would be great for her to see a physical therapist that specializes in concussions and inner ear, what we call vestibular issues, and see if they can sort out if it's concussion related, balance related, inner ear related, and see if they could help her.
Would there be different kinds of activities they would have her perform?
Absolutely. Or? So it's when anytime you have dizziness when you're turning your head, you need to sort out whether it's coming from the visual system or if it's coming from your inner ear. So there's tests that physical therapists would do. And if it's coming from a vestibular system, there's a couple very easy treatment techniques that a physical therapist could perform on her, and they're like 90% effective. She could be better lickety-split.
Oh, so, that's great news.
Yes.
Well, we are taking some other calls here. You can join in. We got a couple open lines at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Jan in Madison next. Hi, Jan. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. This is about arthritis, not about concussions.
Okay.
I was recently diagnosed with arthritis in my spine, especially my lower spine, like L5. Bone on bone, bone spurs, and degeneration of the facile joints, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I know PT can be really helpful for lower back pain when it's muscular, but I'm wondering what it can do for bone issues.
That's a fabulous question, and I am personally thrilled that you asked it. So your spine, like most of your joints, is made up of articular cartilage in this bony structure, but it is supported by the neuromusculoskeletal system. So what we see in the spine clinic here at UW is everyday people who have arthritis in their lower spine. What we do is evaluate you and see where your mobility or strength deficits are, because often you have arthritis at a certain segment in your spine because of how you stand, how you move, how your spine was put together. And we can teach you exercises to perform at home or to do in the clinic that will help offload that arthritic joint. So just like somebody who has arthritis in their knee, where some days they're pretty good, but when they do too much, it flares and hurts. The same is true for arthritis in your spine. The pain doesn't necessarily come directly from the arthritis, but from overloading the joint. So we teach you how to move so that you don't overload that L5 level and those L5 facet joints. We instruct you in posture, because many times it's related to your posture, and that your posture and how you move is overloading that segment and giving you symptoms. We also work on hip mobility, because if your hips are immobile or they lack sufficient strength, then everything you do, getting in and out of a chair, going up and down the stairs, standing at your kitchen sink, will pass that load that should normally be borne by your hips and pass it on to your spine. So physical therapy can do a tremendous amount for people with arthritis at any joint. Mm-hmm.
There we go, Jan. Thank you so much and good luck. Heather in Oshkosh, we turn to you next. Hi, Heather.
Hi. Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, when I was 2.5 years old, I fell out of the car on the highway.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm lucky to be alive.
Yes.
I guess I'm hearing some of the callers mention short-term memory problems. And I'm wondering what kind of tests do you do, and what would you be able to tell when you don't have the individual being able to give you feedback on if their behavior has changed or their memory has changed? Because, of course, I don't know what my memory was like before I was 2.5.
Yeah. Do you have short memory issues now?
Yes, I do. I'm a list crazy.
You're a list person?
Okay.
I have to make lists and put everything on the calendar, or I'll forget it for sure.
And how old are you now, can I ask?
I'm 43.
Okay, all right.
So a couple of things about that. One is, as at that young age, your tissues are very plastic. Chances are you had opportunity, because you were still growing at that point, to repair some of that damage. And thereafter, you know, as an adult, there are normative standards, just right. Like there's a standard range of motion of a knee joint. There are standards for some of these tests, population-based standards. So they could perform some tests and see how you match up to population standards, and then whether or not it would actually be attributable to your accident when you were younger, or if you are just an outlier. I don't think anyone could still tell
right,
you.
Right. But what we do know with the younger population is, it's as Chris, as Lori said, the plasticity, it's called neuroplasticity, and your brain can adapt, remodel much, much better at a younger age. So it's unfortunate this happened. Realistically, it's fortunate that it happened at such a young age, because your brain probably remodeled much, much better than if this would have happened to you as an adult. But like Lori said, it'd be really difficult to tease out what comes what, but you could still be tested.
That's sure. Yeah. No problem there.
Yep.
Thanks, Heather. Good luck. Jennifer in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
For the last 6 years, I've experienced really bad knee pain after I run or work out. And it's to the point where, like, if I do any running, I'm usually, like, limping for about a week afterwards. And I've went to the doctor. I had physical therapy. They did an MRI, and they said there was nothing wrong with either of my knees. They told me to stop PT because they said there was nothing wrong. But there's obviously something wrong, so I guess I don't know what to do. But I'm fairly young. I just turned 40. I'm in good shape. I work out every day.
So what do you do, Jennifer, to work out? Have you found something that doesn't create pain for you?
I do like a lot of, I don't know if you are familiar with those Beachbody programs. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
Like a lot of like the P90X and Hammer and Chisel and the 21 Day Fix. Like I like a lot of those.
Okay.
I'm in a class, like it's called a boot camp class.
Yes. Yep.
That they do with the park and rec in my town.
Yep.
I think I'm like a normal height and weight. I'm 5'6", I'm 140 pounds. I'm sure I could probably lose some weight, but I just don't see why I have these knee problems. And I did have Lyme disease a few times. And the first time I had it, I went undiagnosed for a long time. And I always wonder, like, I know that it can sometimes have like residual, you know, long-term effects on you. But the fact they say it's arthritis, I haven't had a trauma. Okay. Nothing that precipitated the event. Like, what do I do? Because I feel depressed.
So, right. So, yeah, totally. So do you not have knee pain after those other classes? Or is it only when you run?
It's running and then, like, lateral movement sometimes and jumping sometimes. And the jumping and the lateral movements aren't as much as the running. But the running will definitely, like...
So it's impact. So yes, if you right. did, if you had no impact, you'd be okay. If you were walking, you're okay?
Yes, ma'am.
And do you get swelling?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Are you loose jointed? Like one of those people who people say, oh, they're double jointed, or people say I'm super flexible?
Yeah, I would say that. I was a yoga instructor for a long time, so I think I'm pretty flexible.
Okay. And then... where in your knees is the pain? Front, back, inside, outside? Can you isolate it?
It seems like the front a lot and then the outside a lot.
Okay.
And then, like, when I can go upstairs, but I can't go downstairs.
Okay.
When it's really painful.
Okay. And when you had Lyme's a few times, were you treated? Were you on antibiotics?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you have symptoms in any other joints?
From time to time, I have, like, soreness, but okay. It's the knees that are the worst.
Okay. Well, all things considered, it's a little hard. You know, you've been to several people who haven't been able to figure it out. So the disclaimer is, how much can we figure out here without seeing you?
But we do like a challenge.
We do. It sounds like it's patellofemoral pain. It sounds like it's your kneecaps. And my guess is if you're really flexible, you may have some patellar instability going downstairs. Has anyone examined your hips? So if you're slightly mobile, if she's internally rotating, she's got some valgus, maybe a little pes planus, it could be mechanical.
Right. So when you, Jennifer, saw a physical therapist, did you see anyone that looked at your running mechanics? Because it sounds to me like that is the true generator for you, is running. Mm-hmm. Did anyone look at your running mechanics, how you ran?
No, ma'am.
Okay. So I think that's where we need to start. And you're in the La Crosse area, is that true?
Sparta, yes, ma'am.
Oh, Sparta, okay. So if you wouldn't mind mm-hmm. giving your email address to Jill, and I will email you after the show, and I can maybe, I think what we need to do is hook you mm-hmm. up with a running biomechanist, somebody who specializes in running. There are physical therapists out there that do that, and kind of start over and take a look at things and see if we can get you going in the right direction. If not, if it's not running, then we'll figure it out. But there are people who really specialize in running biomechanics that I think would be able to help you, or at least get you running in the right direction. No pun intended.
Right. Yeah. Because you've had enough tests and you've seen people.
Right.
And there are things that we see frequently that don't show up on an MRI and that are easily overlooked. So
right. And here we have somebody who's young and wants to keep exercising, and
well,
we need
sure.
to do everything we can to keep her healthy.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll put you on hold, Jennifer, and then Jill will get to you and get the information. So thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we can take another caller while that's going on, I believe. Kate in Clintonville, it's your turn. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Another equine enthusiast and have the assorted injuries to go through it. Yeah, I know everybody groans. from the age of 10 to 20, I had three horse-related, I'm fairly confident are concussions based on what I've heard today, a couple of knockouts, one where everything turned tinted blue for 15 minutes, one where I lost about 45 minutes, where I was up and active, and then all of a sudden woke up again and was like, wow, I was just on a horse. What happened? I did have a car wreck where I cracked a windshield and an incident with a hay elevator also. So the moral of the story is way too many concussions for someone who's not a boxer. And I do the same thing everybody says, you know, with age where you have the short term. But I also seem to have lost a lot of things from my childhood and early adulthood, a lot of memories. And you hear about, you know, Parkinson's. And I'm just wondering what the cumulatory effects are of many concussions in a young person.
Sure.
And what exciting things I have to look forward to.
Well, that's a great question. And we don't know exactly the long-term effects, but we do know that there is a cumulative effect of sustaining repeated concussions over and over and over. Having said that, I don't know, and I'm looking at Lori, that there's any research showing that some of the brain activities you can do to keep your brain active, if there have ever been any trials looking at that with people with a history of multiple concussions?
Yeah, most of the brain training, at least what I've read, most of those are done by the people who design those systems.
Correct.
And so, you know, there's all kinds of things you can go on the internet and find games, and you can sign up for brain training activities.
Right.
New York Times crossword puzzle.
Exactly. Right. Right.
So, you know, the things that we do know are keeping your brain active by staying engaged in things, by consciously coming up with strategies to remember people's names, to remember your grocery list, to come up with mnemonic devices or whatever it is to keep your brain active. Because we do know that your brain is plastic across your lifetime. So it doesn't mean that once you hit 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 that your brain can no longer change and learn. It can. So as we age, regardless of whether or not we've had a concussion, we have to keep challenging our brain in new ways and new directions, just like we should challenge our body physically in new ways and directions to keep it growing.
And I've read, done some reading on crosswords and so forth are not as effective as what was perhaps originally thought. If you do them, if you just constantly are working on them, you develop little techniques.
And I think that's true with anything. It's no different than your muscles. We like to mix up activities that we do. So, yay, it's good to bike, but it's also good to run and do these other things. And I think the same thing holds true for your brain. It's really important to challenge it in multiple different ways.
Right. So if you only do a crossword every day, you will develop the skill set for that, but you won't advance to anything new. So that's exactly why that variety is key.
Yep.
So thanks for pointing that out, Larry.
And Kate, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori, a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW's Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, as we talk all kinds of physical therapy issues with them today, including concussions, but we'll take a variety of things. And Marion Portage has something for us next that I don't think relates to a concussion. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was having a pain in my right bicep, so I was referred to an orthopedic surgeon. And after having an X-ray and an MRI, he said I had a rotator cuff tear along with a bone spur arthritis. I tentatively scheduled surgery, but in the meantime, I asked him if there was something else we could do. And he referred me to physical therapy, and I have been going to physical therapy, and I have really good rotation. There's really nothing I can't do, except I do still have some pain that it's in the right bicep, and it usually bothers me at night,
if I wake up in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. and then it kind of is achy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to continue doing my exercises, and there I'm using 2 and 3 pound weights.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
The physical therapist gave me a little bit of hope. She said, you know, it's probably not a large tear because I can do everything, but will the exercise, could I just not have the surgery? This is what I don't want to have the surgery, and it's scheduled for September.
Okay. Those are all wonderful questions, and the answer is you don't necessarily have to have surgery. I'm glad you scheduled the surgery pretty far out, because giving physical therapy a really good try is a wonderful idea. My guess is you have a small degenerative tear, and there's very, very, very good outcomes showing that you don't necessarily need a cuff repair. What you might need is just an arthroscopic debridement to go in and clean up those things. And the good news about that, Mary, is that can happen anytime. So there's no urgency to have your rotator cuff repaired. So you could do these exercises, get stronger, your pain may continue to decrease, and you may be able to go years before the pain gets such that you think you need to go in and have your shoulder cleaned up.
Have you had any cortisone injections?
No. Uh-uh.
So sometimes the pain at night, that achy pain, comes from the subacromial bursa, because your arm isn't moving at night and it tends to swell and it'll give you that sort of toothache kind of pain. Many people do very well with a single cortisone injection into that bursa, and that may take care of a lot of the pain. It's also evaluative in many cases to see if the surgery might be successful, because if you don't respond to the cortisone injection, then sometimes you don't do as well with the surgery as well. And finally, the biceps pain. I don't know if anyone's looked at the long head of your biceps, but it is also associated with that same pathology around your shoulder, and the biceps should be addressed.
Exactly. And there's good evidence showing that you can actually just resect the long head of the biceps tendon. You cut it off where it inserts on your superior aspect of your glenoid, and you just move it. Many times that is the pain generator in people's shoulders, and there's very good evidence for good outcomes with the long head of the biceps tendon being moved, per se.
All right, so some good news there for
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Keep going on the path you're going, and you don't, you know, like I said, surgery doesn't have to be in September. It could be later. It could be not at all.
Thanks, Mary. Don in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Don.
Hello. Yes, and thank you. I had a car accident in 1957, and I woke up. I literally was unconscious for 26 days, and I've recovered from that quite well. I still take physical therapy periodically just to keep my muscles going, and I'm in my 80s now. My question is, how common is the kind of accident I had where I was unconscious for 4 weeks, and how typical is it to have a full recovery if that's what I've had, at least mentally? So comment on that.
Well, that's a good question, Don. Both of us work in outpatient, and so the prevalence of people having an accident where they're unconscious and hospitalized for a month, we're not up to date on that literature, but I would say that it's a relatively uncommon event.
Agreed.
In my understanding. So I think you have made a remarkable recovery, and good for you for continuing your physical exercise, continuing to stay active and engaged, and having recovered from that.
Right. I think the numbers of people that have experienced what Don has experienced is so low that there's mm-hmm. we don't have any data. Exactly. He's an outlier for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and I'd be curious what they did for that 26
can
days.
Can you imagine
if you had swelling in your brain, or if they just kept you on an IV for 4 weeks?
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
In 1957, right. I don't know whether they use the IVs that.
Right. I know. Exactly. Yeah. I know. It's pretty remarkable that you survived that. Well, yeah. Good. And we're glad.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling, Don. Appreciate your call very much.
Yep. It is in his 80s. Good for Don.
Brenda in Indianapolis, Indiana. It's your turn. Hi, Brenda.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
I am an occupational therapist and a professor of occupational therapy at the University of Indianapolis, and my son is a listener in Milwaukee, so shout out to Dylan Howard.
Oh, how nice.
He was like, yeah, he's like, Mom, you've got to get on and listen to this. They're talking about concussions. So thank you very much for talking about that and for the shout out for vestibular rehab. And I just wanted to just kind of underline that physical and occupational therapy can both do vestibular rehab with specialized training and education, and both can be so helpful in people recovering from concussions and from vestibular disorders. Occupational therapists also, just even general occupational therapy, have the specialized ability to help people adapt their lifestyle. So if someone, say, is having dizziness and they're having difficulty handling all that extrasensory input, like you talked about the woman spinning at Zumba, we can talk about ways to adapt and help them figure out how to adapt while they're recovering. We can also help people with concussions to compensate for memory loss. So that's good as well. But it does take extra training. It's amazing like how many apps we have nowadays on our phones even that can help us with things like memory loss. So just wanted to share that and thank you again for bringing up this important topic. Yeah.
So, Brenda, are you talking about, when you talk about the apps, are you talking about brain retraining apps or apps that can serve as reminders for people who are having deficits?
More just basic apps that we all have on our phones that can serve as reminders, the reminder app, the notes app, the timer that you can set to go off to remind you to take your medication.
Okay.
Yep. Those are great things.
Those
very good.
Very good. Thank you.
The other group that we don't want to neglect and exclude are speech language pathologists who also do a lot of cognitive things too. So between physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech pathology, there's numerous disciplines that can approach and assess and help people with concussions. So thanks for bringing all that up.
Yeah. And typically they'll enter the system through a provider, and that provider does the assessment. They say, oh, I think you would benefit from seeing occupational therapy for these things, or speech and language pathology for this aspect of your care. And they'll make sure that the appropriate team is assembled.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks again, Brenda. I'm glad to have you listening from Indianapolis.
Right.
Appreciate it very much. Well, we have Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. My problem is of actually breathing. I am 86 years old. I have had a very, very large hiatal hernia for close to 40 years. And I recently was in the hospital and had many, many heart tests on various instruments. And my problem, I have been told, is that this hiatal hernia has been leaning against my left lung for many years, and the two outer layers have now melded together. And so I am never out of breath when I'm lying down or sitting down, but as soon as I rise to an erect position, I am almost immediately out of breath. So I'm wondering if you could instruct me on things I could do that would improve my breathing, because I have a lot of the world left to see.
Indeed.
Sounds like it.
Indeed. Well, we have physical therapists who specialize in thorax-related injuries, flank-related injuries, and things around the diaphragm. So there are certain physical therapists. We have a couple of them at Spine who specialize in diaphragmatic breathing, as well as visceral physical therapy that can see if there are restrictions somewhere that are preventing, for example, your rib cage from expanding sufficiently to take in air. So they'll do an assessment and look at it from a musculoskeletal perspective. Then I expect someone from respiratory therapy has talked to you. Someone while you were in the hospital, did you get any input from respiratory therapy?
No, I did not have anyone from that department, and that quite surprised me.
Yeah,
me
that,
too.
That would me as well. Well, as I said, there
she's
are physical.
In Milwaukee.
She's in Milwaukee. There are physical therapists there. I would call around to a clinic close to you and see if there's somebody who focuses on diaphragmatic breathing and visceral physical therapy.
Right.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we will turn to Steve in Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I've never fallen off a horse. I've done just about everything else. I have a pretty extensive concussion history, probably 17, 18 diagnosed ones. And then when you pile in the bell ringers and the things that where you don't lose consciousness, I'm probably in the 30s.
And from what, Steve? From what activities?
Being a boy.
Being a boy.
Bicycling, car. I had a couple severe ones with bicycle. I had a severe one with a car accident.
Okay.
So what about your, he's wondering about his outcome from all of this.
Right. So we don't know. I hate to say that, but it's we don't know the long-term sequelae of it.
From these kinds of injuries. Now, we have long-term sequelae in football players who get these constant bell rings over a certain period of time. But in the case of Steve, we don't have any data on that.
Right.
We can talk some more about that, but we are going to take a look at the news and weather next. Our two guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, physical therapists. And once we get through the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us, we will be back. You stay with us. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, physical therapist, back with us again. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin. It was great to have them along. Certainly happy to answer your questions at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Before we broke for news, Stephen Madison has told us he had extensive concussion history, up to 30 concussions over time, and he wanted to get some help getting data on his potential outcome, and we really don't have a lot of data, do we?
No,
Lori?
No, we don't. You know, a lot of the information and data on concussions and actually awareness have come out of the research on football players and the chronic encephalopathy that they have following repeated head injuries in football. So are those head injuries and those repeated dings the same as what other people get when they have a bike accident or a car accident or they slip and fall in their driveway and hit their head? We don't really know. That hasn't been researched. So we can only look at people like Steve now and look back retrospectively and say, okay, how is Steve today? How does he compare on all these measures against his peer group, people who are age and gender matched? You know, does he physically and cognitively line up with people his age? And then you look backwards at risk factors to see if he's any different. So really, that's where we're at in terms of that research.
So he'd be able to go in and be tested, you're saying, or not?
Well, potentially he could be in and undergo cognitive testing and some physical testing to see if he measures up. But you have to realize that over the course of your lifetime, there are so many variables that come into play that we can't say that however he is today is because of his concussions.
Right. Wow. And the only way to truly diagnose the chronic traumatic encephalopathy is postmortem. Although there is research looking for a specific protein, I think it's called a tau protein, mm-hmm. and they're trying to develop a way to look at that prior to people passing away in live patients, but that just hasn't happened yet.
Right. And the one other piece of all this is that for people who have repeated concussions, it's difficult to sort out if there's something about how they are that leads them to have situations where they get concussed.
Yeah.
Or if how they are is a result of the concussion. It's sort of a chicken and egg thing.
Yeah. Well, we'll turn to Charlie in DeForest next. Charlie, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Good morning, or good afternoon, everybody. My question is based on a video that I watched last night on YouTube. It involved Eddie Hall, who is the world's strongest man, and he actually developed concussion syndrome after doing very heavy deadlift. I believe his record was 500 kilograms. Now, I do powerlifting, too, but I was curious to know if there's any chance of cumulative effects for a much less trained athlete. And unfortunately, I don't do it consistently. And my wife says I'm starting to lose my memory, you know, but I'm also almost 60 years old. But that was my big question was, is there a cumulative effect for raising your blood pressure high during the lifts and then going back to a resting state?
Okay.
Good question. That's a really good question. I don't know of any data on that. We don't know anything about the Eddie Hall. Eddie Hall, yeah. And whether or not he was on any blood pressure medication, whether he had a family history of hypertension that was treated or untreated or anything like that. So I would say that there's not enough evidence for that where anyone has looked at it.
Right. And this is all about, it's a very different mechanism than a classic concussion. We're talking about, you know, vascular supply, blood supply. And so I know it falls in that garbage can term of concussion type symptoms, but how he sustained his symptoms and how the average person sustains them is different. So it's really hard to say if there's long-term issues because of the difference in blood flow and increased blood pressure versus an actual macro trauma. So you're kind of comparing a micro trauma to a macro trauma. And so it's a great question. I wish we had the answer. And I'm glad you brought up that differences that we have between that from powerlifting versus a true trauma.
Charlie, thank you for calling. Karen in Edgerton, we'll turn to you now. Karen, hi.
Hey. I have a question about, I have two arthritic hips that have been diagnosed more than 10 years ago, and they get progressively worse. I think I'm facing hip replacement, which I prefer to have an alternative to, and I'm wondering if physical therapy is something that would give me the range of motion that I really don't have now.
Absolutely. Every day we see people with arthritis in their hips, and we have some mobilization techniques we use. We have some stretching techniques. We have some sort of self-traction kinds of techniques that we use. And so the idea is to bring your pain down and increase the mobility of your hips. The pool is a great place to exercise to keep your hips strong and mobile without putting a lot of weight on them. So we have a lot of options and a lot of strategies available. If at some point you decide you're going to have your hip replacements anyway, the more mobility and strength and function you have in your hips prior to that surgery, the better your outcomes will be.
So get in the pool.
Yeah. Well, and there's not a downside to having therapy first,
right?
And seeing how much progress you can make, that will give you time to delay surgery if possible, or even for a couple years.
Sure.
So
right, and there was a really good study in France that looked at length of stay of people when they did have a total hip and total knee replacement, and those people who had done what Lori's referring to, all the strength training, et cetera, prior to their surgery, their days hospitalized were less. So yeah, there's lots of upswings to it.
There you go, Karen. Thank you for calling. Lisa in Janesville, your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, I'm calling. I'm in physical therapy right now for what has been diagnosed as bicep tendonitis, but it's not occurring in my shoulder, which I understand is the most common place. It's right in the crook of my arm. So if you were to bend your arm to lift weights, that hurts. This started in February. I have no idea how I got it. Right now, the physical therapist is saying she is recommending that I request to have an MRI because she thinks it's more likely that there is a tear. It hurts when I rotate my hand inwards toward my body, or like at night if I reach to pull the blanket up, it hurts.
Okay.
All right. Huh. So how did it doesn't hurt to flex your elbow?
If there's any, if I have a weight on it, it does.
Okay.
So if there's resistance.
So if you're turning your palm down, it hurts. Not if you're turning your palm up.
A pronator.
A pronator.
No. Pronation.
Okay. Because your biceps is a supinator.
Right.
So, right. So how long have you been in therapy? Are you getting any better?
This is the fourth session. They have been doing the enteophoresis.
Okay.
And some massage, and I can't say that I've seen any gains, and they aren't measuring any gains in movement. I've been doing the stretches during the day where I, you know, take my hand and I do a gentle, kind of force a gentle turn, not to the point where it hurts, but just to stretch it out.
So have you lost motion in your elbow?
Yes.
In what direction? Can you get your elbow fully straight?
I can get it fully straight, but to turn it in. So I can't, to open something, to pick something, you know, I have limited use.
Yeah, something's a
pronator.
Yeah. Something's amiss.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because those motions where you turn your palm inward or downward, that's pronation. Do you do anything where you grip a tool or do any type of rotation with your hands repeatedly for work or anything?
No, nothing. Okay. I haven't never been able to figure out what the source of what caused the injury.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, I would probably go along with that advice to have it further evaluated because it's not fitting a pattern of a typical biceps tendinopathy. First of all, tendinopathies at the elbow in your biceps are rare. Most of them occur up at your shoulder, as your physical therapist has pointed out. And there's a number of other muscles that cross your elbow joint. So I'd take a look at it. What about the radial head? You didn't have a fall or anything.
No, yeah. I didn't. Yeah. The onset was very sudden. I didn't feel any pain. I went in to turn the ignition on my car one day, and I couldn't turn it. It hurt so bad I had to reach over with my left hand to turn the ignition. But prior to that, I didn't have any pain, and there was nothing I was experiencing. So it was very sudden.
Right, which is very unusual as well.
And no other joints affected in any way of any sort?
No, not at all.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I'd chase this down, see what's going on, and then call back and let us know.
Yeah.
Because this is an unusual.
Call back next
this
month.
This is
and
a
let
zebra.
Yeah, you're
she
a zebra.
She needs to go to, just keep going to her.
Well, she had mentioned an MRI, and I do think getting more imaging done is good. And, you know, she's trying kind of the conservative route, but Lori's right. This isn't a classic picture of how we would see biceps tendonitis manifest. It doesn't sound like biceps tendonitis, so. And the fact that the treatment that they're doing for this isn't making it better kind of confirms the fact that there's something else going on that we need to investigate.
There you go. Thank you, Lisa, for calling. Good luck. Let us know how this all turns out. Appreciate your call. Marcia in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Marcia.
Good morning. Oh, I guess it's afternoon. I'm 69 years old, and when I was six, I was playing croquet in the snow with my cousins, and my cousin kind of threw back the croquet mallet with one hand, hit me right between my eyes, and I fell backwards, saw stars. But we were going to go see Snow White that day, and so my aunt did take me to the pediatrician, and then we went to the movie. But what is happening now, and I'm wondering if it's related to that head injury, is that I'm right-handed, and I have a tremor in my right hand. It affects my ability to get food to my mouth. It's not Parkinson's.
So it's
So I'm wondering, you know, if this anything that could have been caused. It's like my hand shakes when I write, when I hold a pen or pencil. It shakes when I hold a spoon, when I pour a pitcher of water.
Reach for a coffee cup, something like that.
Right.
But yep. you don't have a tremor at rest?
No. Like okay. I'm sitting right now and my hand is very
right.
Steady.
Right. Yeah. So that's typically called a benign familial tremor or a benign tremor. And you're right. Parkinson's, you have a tremor at rest. You're talking about a tremor you have with movement. All of that comes from your cerebellum, which is way in the back of your brain. Could this hit between the eyes have impacted that? I'd put it in my pretty unlikely bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it sounds like what you have is an intentional tremor, as she suggested. And I don't think it would probably has anything to do with a concussion at age 6 at this point in your life. So it doesn't mean that tremor can't be treated. So hopefully your physician knows about it and you're getting some intervention for that.
Right.
There we go. Thank you for calling. Leslie in Cottage Grove emailed to say she has carpal tunnel. Her doctor wants to do surgery. Is there PT she can do on the hand or some other non-invasive therapy that will help?
There is. So she could either see a physical therapist or an occupational therapist. There are people who are certified hand therapists, and you can be either a PT or an OT. It would be very important for her to make sure that they rule out her cervical spine and make sure that her cervical spine is not a contributing factor to this. Some people have what we call double crush syndrome, where the nerve is comprised not only at her carpal tunnel, but also at her neck. So if you have surgery and you alleviate it at the carpal tunnel, but you don't fix the neck, she's not going to get that much better. So she should definitely see a physical or occupational therapist, try some exercises, try some conservative care before going down the path of carpal tunnel surgery.
On to another caller. Let's go to Diane in Madison next. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Larry. I'm calling about my friend who has arthritis in his hip, and he's just putting up with it. And I've been trying to encourage him to go to physical therapy because he's not walking at all. He may walk from the car to the house and the house to the car and to the grocery store, but not doing anything more than that as far as walking. He does ride a stationary bike at home, and he does weightlifting, but that's more upper body. And he went to his regular doctor. They did an X-ray, and they said he had arthritis, and I think he downplays things to the doctor. And he was supposed to get a cortisone shot once, but then he backed out of that. So I just think he's going to continue to go downhill if he continues on this same path. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think it sounds like he's doing some activity, but his pain in his hip is precluding him from being as active as we'd like. And I think he'd be a fine candidate for physical therapy to assess his mobility, get him stronger, potentially right. Put him in the pool.
Mm-hmm. So. Or if he doesn't like going out and doesn't like a lot of intervention, the physical therapist can see him intermittently and give him things that he can do at home. But he will find that his world gets very, very small as he stops doing the things he likes because his hip hurts. His hip will not automatically one day, voila, stop hurting. So he will continue to lose motion. He'll continue to lose strength, and his overall function and mobility will decline unless he intervenes. So there are often some very simple things that can be done to help relieve his pain and build up strength in the muscles around his hip so that when he walks, the muscles offload the joint. So it's a fairly straightforward issue where if you have weakness around your hip joint, when you're walking, getting in and out of a chair, on and off the toilet, you place a lot of the load and the stress on that degenerative joint instead of the muscles taking that load. So if we can strengthen around the hip, the muscles can take some of that load off of the joint and decrease the stress on that joint. helps relieve pain and prevents further deterioration.
And also, someone for his age, in his age group, would probably benefit from some balance training as well. So the physical therapist would do some balance training as well.
There you go. Thank you so much, Diane. Joe in Bayfield emailed to say he was diagnosed with a neuroma between the second and third toe. Had a cortisone shot. Not real painful, but kind of irritating for him. His PT feels scar tissue is binding the area and causing toe pain. He's been massaging quite painful, massaging the heck out of the area and then icing. What do you think? He doesn't want surgery on his foot. 69-year-old guy says he does not wear 4-inch spike heels either.
Good for him. That's really good. Well, the thing he should make sure that he's wearing is shoes that have a really nice wide toe box, because you don't want those metatarsal, squished together. So even though he's not wearing high heels, which is great, he should still make sure that his shoes have really wide toe boxes on them.
Yeah, and I assume since he saw a physical therapist that that person assessed his foot mechanics, if there are any arch supports, you know, metatarsal supports, anything to help offload that neuroma. Makes sense. And I'm wondering if he's getting better with that massage and icing. And if not, he may need to back down a little bit. It's possible that he could be overdoing
irritating it and
irritating the neuroma.
Lucia emailed to say that this is about the caller with the elbow issue. Lucia says maybe the person was gripping the steering wheel too tight when winter driving.
That could be a factor.
Could be a factor. What about a person that has shoulder injuries repeatedly? Should that person be doing physical therapy? Would physical therapy help in a situation like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So depending upon the type of injury, so repeated injuries result in things like impingement syndrome, where you get an inflammation around the rotator cuff, the long head of the biceps, the subacromial bursa. And what we do is work on strengthening the rotator cuff and associated structures, looking at range of motion. We also look at how you move, how that person moves, whether they're throwing or they're using that shoulder to play recreational volleyball, or they're using it as part of their work, or they're using it to play catch with their kids. We look at how they move and make sure that they have sufficient motion in their upper back and neck and low back so that they're not overusing their shoulder because they have a problem at an adjacent joint. So physical therapy can help in a lot of ways, but would first figure out what the underlying cause is of the repeated injuries and then addressing that as well.
And then in the last 30 seconds, what about bone-on-bone arthritis in the shoulder? Do you have to have some replacement there? Or?
So that will fall in the same category as all joints with arthritis. We want to do things to alleviate the pain. So if physical therapy would be the first line of defense, followed by activity modification, potentially a corticosteroid injection, and then if all conservative measures fail, you could consider having a joint replacement. But you want to try all those conservative measures first.
And on that note, we are about out of time. I want to thank you both. You will be back with us on August 20th, and
we'll do this
all over again. Thanks, Lori and Jill. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Tomorrow on the show, Patricia McConnell will be back to talk about pet emotions and take your animal behavior questions. That's Tuesday. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A. The news is relentless, but we can help keep you sane and savvy as you listen to the Ideas Network throughout the day. 1A is the place to take a deep dive, a bridge after the news in the morning to bring you up to speed on the biggest stories, so you never miss out. That's 1A, Monday through Thursday afternoons at 1, here on the Ideas Network.